Welcome to episode 45 of the Fredcast for the week of December the 4th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's abbreviated issue of the Fredcast, the Giro announces its 2007 route, the UCI complains to a Spanish judge, Eurobike says nein to Portland and yeah to Sea Otter, Britain goes 100% me, a Canadian woman cyclist gets a 2-year suspension, Paul Craik going home for Christmas, and Specialized says happy holidays in a special way. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike in the cold, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome to another edition of the Fredcast. This one, unfortunately, is going to be a bit abbreviated. As you can tell from my voice, and if you've been following the blog at www.thefredcast.com, you know I'm a bit under the weather. You know, as cyclists, we always think that just because we're in such good shape, and, you know, we take vitamins and we eat right, that we're impervious to these bugs that go around in the wintertime. My voice should be evidence to tell you that unfortunately we're not. So as I sit here with a cup of herbal tea, I will endeavor to get through the news and start working on next week's first anniversary episode of the Fredcast. So I'm going to save my voice for that one. And so for now, let's just jump right into this week's cycling news. The organizers of the Giro d'Italia announced late last week what the route was going to be for next year's 90th running of the epic race. This one is not only the 90th anniversary of the race, but it is also intended to commemorate the 200th anniversary of the birth of Giuseppe Garibaldi. That's the man who brought about Italy's unification. It's a pretty great course. It's going to be starting on May the 12th. On a small island called Caprera, which is off the north coast of Sardinia. It's going to be a 24-kilometer team time trial. There will then be two more stages in Sardinia before the peloton's going to travel up the west coast of Italy through the central regions of Lazio, Umbria, and Emilia-Romagna. Then it will cross the mountains up in the north of Italy with a couple of small brief forays into France and Austria before ending in Milan, and that will be on Sunday, June the 3rd. In addition to the team time trial, another interesting stage will be Friday, May the 25th, when there will be a 13-kilometer mountain time trial. It's an individual time trial, and this one is an uphill time trial. Total length of this year's Giro d'Italia will be 3,442 kilometers. And you'll remember the 2006 winner was Ivan Basso, one of the riders who was banned from this year's Tour de France, but who is now on Team Discovery. And Basso says that he's hoping that he will be the first rider to win back-to-back Giros since Spain's Miguel Indurain did it in 1992 and 1993. So this year's Giro sounds like a great race, one that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Now, speaking of other great races, or at least races that will soon become classics, the Amgen Tour of California has announced that they've assigned three of the world's top professional road cycling teams to compete in this year's Amgen Tour of California, which takes place February 18th through the 25th here in the Golden State of California. Again, it's a 650-mile, 8-stage race modeled after the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, etc., even though those are much longer events. The three teams that were announced, Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team, Team CSC, and Predictor Lotto, they're the first of the expected 16 pro cycling teams to be announced for the second annual race. You remember last year, this was the first year of the event, but they had over 1.3 million spectators on course, and it was won by, Floyd Landis. According to Sean Hunter, the president of AEG Sports, the folks who put on the Tour of California, quote, "The level of competition returning for the second annual Amgen Tour of California rivals any race in the world and proves that cyclists and fans alike are hungry for this caliber of racing in America." And personally, I couldn't agree more. I have put this one on my calendar, and I'm hoping to be able to catch at least a couple of stages of this year's Tour of California. And of course, if I do, I'm hoping to be able to bring you some interviews from the course right here on the Fredcast. Well, as all of these races and teams were preparing for the 2007 season, Pat McQuaid, the president of the UCI, or the International Cycling Union, is complaining to Spanish authorities about the fact that the UCI is not able to use any of the evidence gathered in the Operation Puerto affair against any of the cyclists in the Pro Tour. In a letter to Spanish Sports Minister Jaime Lisavetsky, Pat McQuaid said that the UCI felt helpless because the investigating judge has so far refused to allow the use of any information from the case for disciplinary action. As we've told you here on the Fredcast before, the judge has said that the cases against those involved in the Puerto affair have to be settled in the Spanish courts before the evidence can be used in sporting disciplinary action. McQuaid wrote, quote, "The UCI can do absolutely nothing about this. We cannot, as we would dearly like to do, use the information to discipline and sanction riders involved. Indeed, we must legally allow these riders to continue to race throughout 2007 until this investigation concludes, at which time we might, and I say might, be supplied with enough evidence to go after those riders allegedly involved." So it's obvious here that the UCI is frustrated. Their hands have been tied by the Spanish authorities. They want to go after riders in order to help clean up the sport. But until the Spanish judge allows that to happen, they're really stuck. And I don't foresee any of this changing anytime soon. It looks like it's going to be at least into the spring or early summer before any of that evidence is released back to the UCI for use in a disciplinary action, which could mean that we might be looking at another cycling season with some real huge bombshells right in the middle of it, right in the middle of the Pro Tour. It's a shame that this has to go on. We've talked about this before. It would be good if we could get all of this behind us and move forward with clean cyclists, but unfortunately we're stuck with this situation, and until that evidence is released, a lot of these guys are going to be continuing to race under clouds of suspicion, and that really is too bad for the sport. Now, we've talked recently about how a number of teams and another number of national sanctioning bodies have started their own drug awareness and anti-doping campaigns in an effort to make sure that their riders are clean. Well, on Monday, Great Britain announced an extension to a program that they announced back in 2005 called the 100% Me program. Now, 100% Me is their anti-doping campaign that they have targeted at athletes in all different sports. And there's a website. I put a link in the show notes to the website. And what they're going to be doing is 8 of Britain's Olympic track hopefuls are going to compete as the 100% Me team on Saturday at the Manchester Velodrome. Now, apparently, this is part of Britain's attempt to make sure that the 2012 London Olympics are drug-free, as well as other sports going on between now and then and past then in the UK. So go ahead and check out the website. I put a link in the show notes. It's just one more way that they're trying to educate athletes and the public about making sure that sports are drug and doping free. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I told you about the possibility that the organizers of Eurobike, Messe Friedrichshafen from Germany, were considering starting a competing show to Interbike in the United States. And they were looking at doing this in the Portland, Oregon area sometime in September of 2007. Well, now word has come from Eurobike that, according to, quote, organizational factors, that the Messe Friedrichshafen folks have decided that they will not have a show in 2007, although it does look like they're aiming to do one in 2008. We talked here on the show about the fact that if they did do a trade show here in the United States, that it would obviously compete with Interbike, and that there might therefore be a possibility of a couple of consumer days. And I know that that had people really interested and really excited. Now, according to the press release from Friedrichshafen, the decision was primarily attributed to delays in putting together a U.S. management team, although they also went on to say, you remember, there were a lot of questions about why they might do this. Well, according to them, that they were approached by what they called, quote, various U.S. bicycle industry leaders to fill the need for an alternative trade show format in the United States. So this is very similar to something that happened in the mid-90s, where there was the BIO show, or the Bicycle Industry Organization, that competed directly with Interbike, because some of the larger companies in the industry felt that Interbike wasn't serving their needs. Now, meanwhile, Messe Friedrichshafen has also decided that they would support and assist the Sea Otter Classic, which takes place in Monterey, California in April, that they would be helping them with their consumer trade show that takes place in conjunction with the races that go on there. According to Messe Friedrichshafen's CEO Klaus Vellmann, quote, Messe Friedrichshafen is committed to raising its profile in the United States. We'd like to harmonize the trade show with the sporting event at the Sea Otter Classic for the spring start of the cycling season in order to reach manufacturers, retailers, the media, and consumers more consistently. So if you've never been to Sea Otter before and you're looking for something to do in April, I'm going to tell you, you might consider getting over to Monterey, California. Number one, it's a great event. And number two, I have a feeling that this is going to be probably one of the best consumer expos for cycling we've ever seen. I'm looking forward to it. For those of you who might follow women's cycling, you may remember the name Genevieve Janson, who was a Canadian cyclist who was very successful, but always seemed to have allegations of doping dogging her. For instance, in 2003, while she was with the Canadian national team preparing for the World Championships, it was announced that she had recorded a high hematocrit level, which is a measure of the number of red blood cells in the blood, and she was asked to not take part in the World Championships that year. Then in 2005, July 25th to be exact, during the Tour de Tuna stage race in Pennsylvania, she was subjected to an out-of-competition doping test, and a few months later, it was announced that she had tested positive for EPO. Well, on November 28th of this year, the USA Cycling, which is the sanctioning body here in the United States, announced that they had adjudicated the case of Janson. And the reason for that is because at the time of her test, she was a USA Cycling licensed athlete because her primary residence was here in the United States at that time. They announced they adjudicated the case and that she had agreed to a 2-year suspension from professional cycling, and that 2-year suspension would begin July 25th of 2005, the date that the positive EPO test or the positive EPO sample was taken. Now, I don't think that this suspension really matters a whole lot. According to the Wikipedia article about Janson, she has since retired from cycling as a result of all of these doping allegations. But it is important to bring it to you here so that you understand that these cases do finally get adjudicated, that there are eventually results. Interesting to note that I was watching Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel on HBO last week, and he was interviewing Floyd Landis. And one of the footnotes to that story was Gumbel making the comment that while there have been many cyclists who have been, and other athletes who have been accused of doping, and while most of those will appeal their case, none of those appeals have ever been successful. So here's a case where Janson really was forced from cycling as a result of her positive test. And it leads you to wonder what's going to end up happening with Floyd Landis. Well, I think that he's making a valiant case and what appears to be a quite valid defense. I think that Bryant Gumbel's comment was very telling in that nobody so far has been successful in appealing one of these. So with Floyd's case coming up here again in the next couple of months, I don't know. It doesn't look good for him, but I suppose only time will tell. Well, on the last couple of shows here on the Fredcast, I've told you about Australian cyclist and former stair climbing champion Paul Craik. The 29-year-old cyclist is in a spinal care unit now in New Zealand, but he is expected to be going home for Christmas. Now, if you don't remember, Craik sustained injuries during a race last month when a gust of wind blew him and several other cyclists off the road during the last stage of the Tour of Southland in New Zealand. It looks like there's a very good possibility that he may be paralyzed following the accident. But according to an article I read, his spirits remain high. According to Paul Craik, quote, "I would like to thank all those people for showing their concern and sending me very positive thoughts. It means so much to me to receive the supporting emails and letters, and that's a big part of what keeps me positive. The continual support is really helping me keep my optimism and keep the battle going." So, unclear yet whether or not he will be paralyzed or whether he'll get back on the bike, but it's nice to know that he'll be going home for Christmas, and once again, we do send him our best wishes. Now, what you're hearing there in the background is Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker Suite performed entirely on bicycle parts by experimental musician and cyclist Flip Baber. You can find this on the Specialized Bicycles website, and I put a link in the show notes. This is Specialized Holiday Card to you. It includes animation of a rear cog that looks a lot like a Christmas tree. Now, if you're wondering where all the sounds came from, the glockenspiel and clarinet sounds are played on spokes. The cello and violin pizzicatos are plucked derailleur cables. The triangle is a disc brake. The percussion, shifting, coasting, fingers over turning spokes, chain pulls, braking, clipping into pedals, backspinning, and taking the air out of tires. According to our friends at BikeBiz.com, the entire piece was produced on all of those actual Specialized bike parts. This was on one Specialized road bike and one Specialized mountain bike. And of course, I do want to thank BikeBiz.com for showing me this link, because this is really cool and something you definitely have to check out. If you want more information on how Baber put this together, check out the Create Digital Music website, where you'll find him talking about how he did this, and you'll also find other music created on bicycles. According to the end of Specialized Little Holiday Card to you, who needs a glockenspiel? And that's going to do it not only for the news, but also for the show for this week. I apologize for the abbreviated show, but as you can tell, I do not think that my voice is going to last much longer this week. So I do want to preserve it for next week's first anniversary, 1 year anniversary of the Fredcast. I can't believe that it's been a year, but I'm glad that you're all still with us. And in the meantime, you can stay in contact with the show. Go ahead and send me emails to thefredcast@gmail.com. Check out the website anytime at www.thefredcast.com. You can find all the archives and show notes, as well as the Fredcast forums right there. If you like, you can send voicemails to our listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED. You can send audio comments anytime to the regular email address, or you can click the link on the left-hand side of the page to use your computer to send an audio comment over the web. And while I can't speak for very much longer, I did want to bring you your PodSafe cycling music for this week. It comes to us, as always, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's music, as I promised, a little bit more holiday music for you from a band you may have heard of before. This is I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus by Twisted Sister, that famous band from the 80s, from their new album, A Twisted Christmas. And I've put links in the show notes to where you can find them on the Podshow site, their own website, as well as to where you can buy the song or the album on iTunes. So until next week and the first anniversary of the Fredcast, sorry about the abbreviated show, but I hope you enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.